This week on Out of the Air features artist Blake Gore, who uses 0.15 pen nib, decorates minimalist canvases with an eye for detail. Next, textile artist Shani Solomon, who creates unique, handmade, one-of-a-kind wearable fiber art using the finest silks and textiles. Our spotlight's on the 65th Annual Chesterton Art Fair coming August 3rd and 4th at Dogwood Park.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. She's brand new to us and also for the Chesterton Arts Center as the new marketing director. And she's going to be telling us about some of the things happening. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight, Ajea Mezcabon.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Well, we first want to just get a little bit of background on you since you're going to be the new marketing director. And tell us a little bit about your background and everything before we talk about the events going on there.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm the ripe age of 23, so I'm fresh out of college. I studied at Indiana University in Bloomington, and I majored in marketing and advertising with a minor in graphic design. So I love advertising, marketing, telling stories, and sharing information about the things that matter. So,
and locally, where did you grow up?
Yeah, I'm based in Chesterton. I've lived in Chesterton basically my whole life. And I used to take classes at the art center when I was little, which actually kind of helped develop my love for art and art making. So it's a really nice full circle moment to be working here now.
Have your own art practice?
I don't. I would like to try to start making time to have my own art practice, maybe doing some freelance graphic design or something like that on the side. But as of right now, I'm kind of dedicating a lot of my time to here and just working in general.
So tell us a little bit about some of your day-to-day duties there, and then we'll get on to what you're really here for, is to talk about what's happening there.
Yeah, so I've been really working on redeveloping, I guess, our social media and marketing strategy. We feel like we want to keep telling the stories that matter and the stories that really explain what the Chesterton Art Center can do for the community. And so I've been working on trying to specify what that is, what our impact is, and how we can connect with our audience. So everything that I do is focused on, connecting with our audience and just telling stories that show how important art is in the community.
Well, speaking of what's important in the community, you are now working on several things, but upcoming in August is one of the big events at the Chesterton Arts Center. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's going to be the 65th annual Chesterton Art Fair. It'll be the first art fair that I've worked at, but I've attended the art fair as a visitor for many years. So that's going to be on August 3rd and 4th. And on August 3rd, which is Saturday, it'll be open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And August 4th will be open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. there's going to be free parking, and admission is only $5 per person. And if you're under 12, you get in for free. So that's always a fun perk. So bring your kids.
Sure, this year.
So I believe that was a culmination of quite a few, but Holly Jackson was one of them. I know Hannah, the executive director, helped with jurying. I believe Rebecca from Three Moons Fiberworks helped jury some as well. I'm sure there was more that I'm just kind of forgetting. So yeah, but lots of local artists helped jury the show.
How many artists do you have in the show?
We've got 81 currently. So 81 confirmed. So that's about the same as last year. It's a really full fair, and there's lots of different varieties of mediums that people work in. So we've got like a lot of jewelry, a lot of ceramics, some leather works, watercolor, fine art, fine photography, basically anything art related that you might enjoy, you could probably find at the art fair. So
do you think it's, what's the balance between all of those, mostly painting and jewelry, or?
It's a lot of ceramics and jewelry this year. It kind of changes every year depending on who applies and the jurors, of course, but there is a lot of ceramics, jewelry. There's some fiber art that's really cool. And there is like watercolor painting, photography. I'm just kind of going off the list in my head.
Can you name some of the artists?
Yeah. So there's Steven Skinner from Black Tree Studio. He's based out of New Carlisle. He's a pottery person. We've got some people from California. Haley Shoup, who is from California, she does watercolor. And Chandra Williams, who's based out of Michigan, she makes leather goods and bags, which are really beautiful. And we've got Linda Weinegar from Weinegar Pottery in La Porte as well, who is also a member at the at the center. She'll be selling her work there.
Mm-hmm. So what about some of the other things going on at the art fair, like music and food and also activities for kids?
Yeah. So we've got quite a few different food vendors this year. We've got Ben's, Soft Pretzels, Dog Days, a coffee truck, Travel and Tom's Coffee of the Dunes, a vegan food truck, and a taco food truck as well. And then on Saturday, we've got Marco Villarreal, Billy Foster, and Patty Schaffner performing. So that'll be the entertainment throughout the day. And then on Sunday, we've got Alexis Alexis Bratskis, Mike Owens, and Leanne Sutler performing on Sunday. So yeah, it'll be lots of great music, lots of good food, lots of art, lots of things to buy and be shopping for. So
well, quickly, we're in our last minute here. Tell us, you do have a current exhibit running that's going to run through September 1st. Tell us briefly about that, and then information again about where the art fair is, how to get tickets and things like that in our last few seconds here.
Yeah, of course. So Beneath the Surface by John Hook and Andrea Peterson. They're local to La Porte and have their own homestead and pottery and papermaking studio there. They'll be exhibiting from July 5th to September 1st. They're going to be doing an artist demo on August 16th from 4 to 7 as part of Chesterton's Third Friday, which we're really excited about. And we've also got a free family art day planned on Saturday, August 24th from 10 a.m. to 2. So all are welcome for that to come and make art for free at the center.
That's all the time we have for you. That's the new marketing director for Chesterton Arts Center, Agia Amezga-Bone. Thank you for sharing on Art of the Year Spotlight.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, Esther.
And a quick Spotlight Extra. NWI Superstar on September 27th, Geno's in Hobart is where the final performance will be. And if you in before August 30th, you can also be a sponsor of this wonderful project. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, everyone. This is recording artist David Arkenstone, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Blake Gore to Art on the Air. Blake combines endless curiosity with an eye for detail. His tiny drawings comprise 1 or 2 inches in size. While he enjoyed drawing throughout his childhood, the only formal training was a few high school classes. He started using drawing as a creative outlet during his career as a university instructor and an advisor at Vanderbilt University. He noticed a miniature drawing challenge before the pandemic to draw a 1x1 inch drawing every day for 30 days. Now we will learn about the rest of the story. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Blake. It's really wonderful meeting you.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Blake, we always like to find out about our guests in detail. I always like to say their origin story. And I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Blake.
Well, it's been an adventure, and it's still an adventure every day. So I was born in a little bitty town in Mississippi, where my family had been for a really long time. In fact, my ancestors were the first European settlers in the area. So I grew up in that little bitty place. And, you know, I liked to draw when I was a little kid, but it sort of faded away, I guess, when I was probably around, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 years old, as this sort of inner critic started to speak up and say,
so do you
know
think
what?
So was your community, your family, were they receptive to your drawings? Because sometimes if that's not happening, you would lose interest maybe.
Yeah, I think that I always got positive feedback, but I'm not sure that was much of a conversation. They were kind of more for me. However, there was a strong expectation in my family to pursue medicine. And that was a big part of my identity growing up, was to do that, because my dad is the fourth generation in a row to be a physician in this little town. So that dates back to before the Civil War. so the pressure was
that
on.
That is pressure.
To do that. So it took a lot. So my emphasis started to shift more into academics and sports as well. And art just sort of got pushed to the side. And I never thought about it again until I was in middle age. But in between that time, I went to Ole Miss for undergrad for English and political science, and had a couple of classes away from a classics minor, because at that point I'd sat in on a knee replacement surgery and discovered very quickly that was not something that I was interested in. So
no medical drawing in your future.
No. So the search was on to figure out, you know, what am I going to quote unquote do? So I ended up going to graduate school at Ole Miss for mental health counseling. And that was kind of how I launched into the professional world. And then very quickly discovered that working in a university setting would be a better fit for me, because there were so many hats I could wear. And that was something that I finally started to accept about myself a little bit later on, was that I have just a really, really broad range of interests. I used to kind of think that was something might be wrong with me because nobody else seemed to be interested in so many different things. But as I got older, I started to embrace that a little bit. And the first opportunity to do that was in a university where I got to teach, got to counsel students, eventually moved into a lot of online educational design and I guess optimizing students' learning experience. And it was around that time, I guess in my late 30s, where I saw a drawing prompt on Twitter, and it was to draw a 1-inch drawing every day for a month and share it. And for people that really know me, it wasn't very surprising to them, I think, that I would be interested in something like that, because I'm always kind of picking stuff up. But I do think it surprised people just how much I got into it, because at the end of that month, I had seen some improvement. And of course, I'd had daily repetition and thought, hey, I enjoy this, but I think there's also some potential here for me to develop a new skill set. And it took off. I started to share my stuff online, and people started to ask me, hey, do you sell these things? And I was like, well, yeah, sure, I do now. and then I did an art show in my near my hometown a few months after that, and then did maybe three or four more before the pandemic, and thought, hey, this is a really fun side hustle that's worth my time. But then, you know, being locked down in COVID for a little while and having a chance to really refine my skills and spend a lot of time with it, and also just to reflect on kind of where I wanted the next 15 years of my life to go from in a professional sense, I started to think, man, there may be some legs to this as a career. So coming out of the pandemic, I moved out of the university. And for the first year, I still had my private coaching business. And I'd say it was about 75% coaching, 25% art. Then the next year, it flipped to 75% art, 25% coaching. And then the next year, pretty much went all in with the art, which has been an exciting journey. I mean, I still feel like a rookie. there's a lot to learn.
So many big leaps in what you've just said. One, I'm just kind of interested. You go from poli-sci to mental health, but then, sure. So I'm kind of curious about what aspect of mental health to fit in with the whole picture of where we're going to like wind up, but then also to do the art fairs. So you started out local, because it is truly a big leap to go to the bigger shows. You know, the investment, the financial investment is so much more than your art. I mean, it's the tent, it's the tables, it's the display, it's the travel, it's the food, you know, it's a big undertaking. So it's quite impressive how quickly you made that transition. So the response must have been really tremendous.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's definitely a lot of hard work. And I think there are probably some riskier ways to go about it. I'm a big fan in placing small bets, and kind of rapid prototyping and testing ideas out in the real world. And that was something that I did a lot with students in the university setting, where I did a lot of work in design thinking. So I felt like that a lot of those frameworks and design principles translated pretty well to kind of, I guess, for lack of a better word, designing this new life, this new business. And yeah, a lot of low risk, rapid tests.
Look at the poli-sci and the mental health too. It really, and the university life really prepares you for the show circuit, because it's a very person to person enterprise. So
sure. And I don't think that's a connection that a lot of people who just meet me can, it's hard for them to connect the dots. But for me, at least inside of my head, it wasn't that big of a leap, because whether it was understanding people's behavior on a macro scale, or as an English major, understanding people's individual stories lots of times, or as a mental health counselor, helping people understand and write their own stories. There's always been that human element. And I think that a lot of that included just bringing ideas to life. And I think now I'm just doing that on paper, as opposed to doing that one-on-one with people. So that was in my counseling days. I mean, in the university setting, a lot of my work was in career counseling. But in graduate school, I did a lot of, you name it. I mean, I did family counseling couples. I did many, many, many hours of play therapy, where I did get a chance to do a little art therapy, actually quite a lot of art therapy. I had a little bit of exposure, but it seems like a whole, it sounds like forever ago now. It's kind of fun to sit here and reflect on it a little bit, but
so even you started these drawings, so before that were there people in the art world that you really appreciated? Because you know what your drawings remind me of? They do remind me of etchings. They have that same quality and feel about it, and of course reminds me of my very first art crush, which is Durer, you know, who just
it's funny you say it, because he's probably number one for me.
Yeah, definitely. My very first art crush.
I remember seeing, I took one art history class in undergrad. And I remember when, this is showing my age here, but when the professor clicked the slide and showed one of his pieces, it blew my mind that somebody could do that. So, and I think even more so than maybe a lot of artists, I think for me, studying the art of people that I really appreciated was a huge part of me learning, because I took an art class in high school, but it was more like a study hall. I didn't do anything. I can't remember learning anything.
Yeah, it's the easy A. Art was always the easy A.
Yeah. I mean, it was fun. We did a few things, but, so basically everything that I learned about creating art was done through either YouTube or the Google Culture app, basically where I can visit museums anywhere in the world, you know, and zoom in these super high res photos to where with some of this woodblock work and etching and drawing, you can really zoom in to the techniques. And then sitting back and thinking, all right, you know, how close could I get to replicating that? That was a big deal. I mean, I felt like, you know, these people that had been, you know, dead for 500 years were probably some of my best teachers.
I'm interested in your process. I'm looking at your university page, and one that really stands out to me is the Tech Tower, Georgia Tech, where you have it sort of incomplete at the bottom. But do you work from like a photograph or a sketch, like on location, and then minimize that? So tell us your process, and of course, your unique technique of using, I think, is what, 1.5 millimeter pens.
Sure. So when I first started out, I did do a lot more urban sketching than I do now. But I don't feel like I have the time right now to do as much as I would like to do. I do like drawing on location, but I need a big chunk of time because I'm the slowest person you've ever met. and I think that's what, I wish I could say this is an intentional decision, but the working in miniature was such a perfect fit for my personality, because it gave me an opportunity to put some constraints around the creative process to where I could use that slowness and obsession with detail, but not let it hold me back to the point to where I would never finish anything. So that has been a great blessing to me, and something, again, that just happened. I didn't go looking for it. So yeah, I'm kind of under the gun these days, just to create enough work to where I really need a finished product, and urban sketching, at least for me, doesn't lend itself well to the style that I'm usually putting out there at shows. So most of the time I'm drawing lately I'm drawing a lot just in my house. And you know, I like to draw from photo references, one, because it's it stays still. And two, I just really, I'm obsessed with trying to cram in the detail. And there's just so much that I can imagine in my mind of drawing a location. I kind of need to be sitting there staring at it.
And you put some of your things on sort of different products. I'm looking at your product page, and you have like iPhone cases and mugs, but also, a whole wide variety. Is it puzzles even? Oh, yeah, you have puzzles and what? A little AirPod cases. So you have some other merchandise and everything like that. And it's so reasonably priced. I mean, you can own this art for not a lot of money. And so I often wonder financially, how well do you do with that? You know, because these are not very expensive.
Right. So one of the things about small art that means a lot to me is being able to offer art that's accessible to anybody. You know, my prints are $25. I could probably sell them for more, but I really like at shows being able to, you know, talk to an 18-year-old who's really interested in art, or a college student or a broke grad student, and them being able to take something with them. Now, on the flip side of that, my original work is quite a bit more. It's hard to keep my website as updated as I would like to with original work, just because I'm on the road so much. I do about 25 to 30 shows a year. I would say 95% of those are east of the Mississippi. I go west a couple of times a year, but that's a pretty good ways for me from Virginia.
In your booth, I imagine a lot of the originals are framed. Do you also offer originals unframed at the shows?
All my original work is framed at the shows. Mm-hmm. A lot of my commission work is unframed, just because I appreciate people's unique preferences, you know, in style and things like that. Now, you know, it's tough to, I wouldn't want to put a bunch of money into a frame and then somebody kind of be disappointed or not work with it. But yeah, right. Everything at the shows that's framed, and that's an easy way for me to communicate to people. You know, prints are in the bins, packaged, all original work is on the wall, framed. But I really, really like being on the road is a challenge, for sure. I mean, I'm married, I have 4 kids. So it's a completely different lifestyle than what I was used to in the university life. But you know, everything's a trade-off. You know, everybody's job is hard. You just have to choose the type of hard you want to tackle. And, you know, I'm gone a lot on the weekends, but when I'm home, we homeschool. So like I'm super home. we're around each other a lot. So, that's great, but it's a lot of driving. I think I drove 20,000 or 25,000 miles.
Wow.
I tell I'm a part-time artist. I'm a full-time roadie.
Well, that brings up an interesting question. Since you're working like one by one or two by two, do you start and finish, or can you walk away and come back to it?
So I like to do it in one sitting, right, or at least in one day. That's a common question I get at shows. One is, do you use magnification for these? The answer to that is no. The second one is, how long do they take? And I would say that the range is a couple of hours up to 30, just depending on what it is. But yeah, I've got this weird like tunnel vision. When I'm in it, I want to get through it. So, I mean, it is not uncommon for me to wake up in the morning, 6 o'clock, start something, you know, look up and it's past lunch. Like, I probably need to stop to eat and then finally finish it up sometime in the afternoon and realize, oh, wow, I probably need to take a shower too.
Because sometimes you get that line, like sometimes if I leave the drawing, I tend to want to just finish it pretty much in one go, because I, you know, this way I'm sitting or whatever, everything changes, or the way I'm holding my pen, and I can't sometimes get back into it the way, or develop the flow that was there before necessarily. It's
totally
complicated.
I totally feel that, especially at working at miniature scale, everything behaves differently. So the angle of the pencil, how well the ink is flowing for whatever reason right then.
Right.
And like the lightness or heaviness of the touch, you know, just staying in that to keep that consistency, because if you do something weird, people are looking at it so closely, they're going to see it. So, yeah, I like to just get in it and get it done.
Your decision to use a color versus black and white, what drives that?
Well, I do a little bit of both. And it just depends on the subject. Yeah. And I'm always experimenting. I mean, my favorite tool is a very, very fine fine liner. It's a 0.15 millimeter tip, but you know, I also will sometimes break out the tiny little watercolor brush or very sharp pencil. And I even have some things like I have a bristle from a toothbrush that I use sometimes to do a little bit of acrylic. And lately I've really gotten into silver pointing. So I've got some really, really sharp silver wire, copper wire that I've been working with that achieves a finer line that beautiful. I can get in ink.
You can even do it with gold or brass too. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. And then playing around with the patina. I mean, that's just been a whole other world that I've started to explore lately.
You ever want to do anything large?
I wish I could. I wish I could. But, you know, I know myself enough at this point to know this is probably the only art I could ever do. And I'm happy with that. I mean, I just don't think I could ever finish it. I would feel so overwhelmed. Yeah, I would just sit there and stare at the wall.
Well, we need to wrap this up here, but we want to give you a chance to tell people about what you have coming up, your website, how people can find your work and everything.
Sure. Well, I'm a busy guy. I mean, I've always got something coming up. So the best way to keep up with where I am is my website. So blakegore.com. Yeah, I have my art there, but also have my show schedule. And again, I'm all over the country, so I'm usually in the neighborhood at some point or another. So that's a good place to follow that. Also have any exhibits that are going on are listed there. And then I'm usually pretty active on Instagram as well. So it's just at blakegore.com. where I have a lot of still photos, but also some fun process videos too. I mean, people are always interested in how do you make these little things. So there's some fun stuff there.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. That's Blake Gore. You can find him at blakegore.com or at Blake Gore on Instagram. And you can see all his work there and his upcoming schedule. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your art journey.
Thank you both. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure viewing your work.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Alan Harrison, author of Scene Change, a new best-selling book on the subject of nonprofit arts organizations, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM. Thanks for listening.
We are pleased to welcome Shani Solomon to Art on the Air. Shani has blended the love of art, creating, and travel. During high school, she was interested in painting and ceramics. After graduating a year early from high school, she traveled around the world for 4 years. In Asia, she noted the silks, color, texture, and the art of creating textiles. She has studied and taken textile courses in Italy, the US, the UK, and India. She started a small business at 21 years old, beginning with small farmers markets to now, after more than 21 years, she is participating in some of the most prestigious juried art festivals. She now focuses on hand screen printing, creating the most exquisite high-quality wearable fiber art and printed wall art. She shows as Scarlett Solomon. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. It's such a pleasure to meet you, Shani.
I'm honored. Thank you for having me.
Well, Shani, we want our guests to always get known to our audience. I always tee that up by saying, you know, your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Shani.
Well, again, thank you for having me. It's really, really, just an honor, and I'm excited to be here. And so I was born in Israel in 1981, and in 1988, I moved with my family to Salt Lake City out of all the places in the U.S. And I was living in Salt Lake until I was 17 years old. And, you know, during that time, you know, I look at it very differently now as a, you know, as an adult. But, you know, I grew up in such a beautiful place in the mountains.
And so beautiful.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
And I learned really good manners there because society, the way it is over there. And so I really like, I look at it and it actually, you know, it's where I started my business after I went traveling after high school, which is when I really was more interested in art and, you know, ceramics, so working with my hands and then also doing things, you know, visually. And when I, after I went traveling after high school, so 4 years later, when I went back to Salt Lake is where really was the foundation of my business. So I would, you know, do, the farmer's market. And when there was a very, popular, show in, Park City, Utah, which still is happening today. And that was also a great introduction, and helped me, you know, build and, change my business. So for being a place, Salt Lake City, that, you know, as a non-LDS member growing up there when it was not as, you know, diverse as it is today, but I have a lot of, you know, gratitude to that place, and I still do, you know. But it was kind of an interesting place, and I think of it now, you know, just creating art, and it is an influence, because I guess when you go in deeper with the art and it's all about the impact and it's about your life experience, and I go back to that time kind of being the other, and it's interesting because I feel that still with the art that I am creating.
Yeah, well, it informs your visual view and your color palette, you know, like those initial things that you grow up with, you know, they kind of get imprinted.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And nature, you know, I mean, I use a lot of, you know, nature colors in my prints, you know, and I feel like that was, you know, I grew up 20 minutes. I could walk out of my house and be in the mountains and be, you know, by myself, which is just incredible nowadays to even, you know, it's hard to do that anywhere. And then, you know, traveling after high school, I just couldn't, I was just so ready to leave. I graduated a year early and I bought a one-way ticket, and I was in Europe for 2 years, and I was in Italy working for a year, and that was just amazing. And, you know, just how people dressed, and it's not even the way they dress, it's the attitude. And I see that today with, you know, women that, you know, purchase items for me, and some, you know, it's really all about the confidence, you know, and, it has nothing to do even with the item, it's the person. And that's just almost like, you know, just, so it's really interesting. But Italy, and then, you know, I was in Australia, I lived there for a while, and color, you know, it's just the color. And that still influences me today. If you ever go to Australia, it's just the sun. And if you go to Asia and you go to India, also color. And India was just this, I don't know if you've ever been, but if you love art and silk and color and, you know, just being in a whole different world, and the beauty of it is everyone speaks English. So you can actually, you know, understand sort of what's going on.
Right. And be part of it.
And yeah, exactly. You're in it, and you know, you can get through, you know, what, it's just such a different world. And then you go to Japan, which is another like mind blowing place. And, so yeah, traveling also, and it still continues to influence me and, inspire me. And Asia, especially, just that you have textiles ready, you know, anywhere you go, whether it's Vietnam, Thailand, the Philippines, you know, Indonesia, everyone, it's just ready. Here it's just more difficult in the US, I think, you know, because what we have Joann's, which is great, but you know, it's just, you have silks and batiks and just things that day to day you can't really find here, you know.
I know, one of my favorite, you know, fabrics in New York. I mean, it's just like a visual treat for me. Yeah. But how do you do that? You graduate early from high school and then you go on this epic journey. Like, what was, like, you graduate and then did you know that you were going to do that? What was the genesis of that?
Oh, I had no idea. I think I left and, you know, I come from a family where, you know, education is very important, and you know, I was expected to go and, you know, be an accountant or something. I don't know. Traveling, it just kind of took me away and I had the best time. And when I got to Asia, my first thought was just, wow, I can do something here. That was my initial thought. And I didn't know what it was. You know, when I got to India, I bought a ticket for 3 months. So I was going to travel for 3 months and I ended up staying about a year there. And it was incredible. And because, you know, I mean, I was backpacking, so I was staying in places, you know, $2, $3, $5 a night. And so that dollar went a long way. And it was, every region that I went to was like a different world, a different country, different colors, different silks, different, foods. You know, foods, everything. Different languages, different alphabets. You know, I mean, it's just such a rich cultural place, but I really just fell in love with the color there. And I went to Varanasi, which, you know, is a very holy place for the Hindus. And it's where the Ganges runs, and it's where, you know, people, you know, they burn the bodies there, because if you die in Varanasi, if your body's burned in Varanasi, then you don't come back to the karma and do the, you know, the wheel again and the reincarnation. That's the history. Hopefully I'm getting it right. But there in Varanasi, it's a region that's, or the city that's, you know, famous for their silks, famous for the wedding saris. They do a very specific type of weave, a very specific type of red color and the gold thread. And they have that region in India, especially now, just after years of buying silk in India. And I still, to this day, buy silk from weavers in that area, not in Varanasi. But you have Bihar and you have Bengal, and that area, they just produce thousands of different types of silk, thousands of different weaves. And the weave is really what makes something, a matte finish, a gloss finish. It's just so fat. There's so many layers that go into just weaving. And then you get into the textile design world, and then you get into the cutting, which is a whole different animal. And then you get, you know, I mean, it's just so many layers.
Then saris are what, like 6 or 7 yards long. So they're used to like designing with like a multiple yards of, you know, fabric in a garment. It's like so exciting.
It's just incredible because, you know, they weave in things, or, you know, it, the way it's dyed, and then they add embroidery. I mean, it's just, it really just endless, to be honest. And it's really, I've learned, you know, in just thinking about it, talking about it, it's really about just putting a focus on something, because it's easy to get lost in the textile world. And I think there's so much work that goes into it that people don't know. And I find that, you know, nowadays, you know, you can go to Target and buy a t-shirt for $3-4. And then when you say something costs $300-$400, people sometimes, unless they know about textiles, they are just in shock. But I mean, that's really not that much. If you think about all the work that went into it, not even my work, getting the, you know, just, for, you know, if anyone's ever been to a silk farm, just the way that they produce the silk and take it out off the cocoon. And that's just, it's incredible. It's really amazing.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM.
So in India, was that where the fabrics really grabbed you? And what did you take then from each country as you went on? I'm not sure where India was necessarily in your journey. So,
well, India was the first. When I was in Varanasi, there was a really beautiful store that just had hundreds of different types of fabrics. And I made friends with the owner of the shop, who's a wonderful man. And he had all these scarves that were, you know, chenille or organza, and they weren't dyed or anything. They were just white. And And I just thought that's, you know, really amazing. And, you know, took a little like dyeing class there. And then I bought like 50 scarves and brought them back to Salt Lake and, you know, did some, you know, textile, you know, dyeing and painting on it. And I mean, I look back at it now and I'm like, oh my God, you know, but it worked. And I sold them at the farmer's market and it went really well. And then I went back and got more. And then after about 3-4 years, I was ready to do, you know, after learning, you know, because again, it's just like a jungle and then learning more about fabrics and thinking, okay, well, what's interesting. And then I got into printmaking and, you know, printing on cotton is very different than printing on silk. So I had to take, you know, courses and I took one in London where they we learned about printing on silk, you know, because it's different dyes, different finishing. And so that's, again, a whole nother monster. But, you know, India today, you know, I buy my silk directly from the silk weavers. So, you know, I'm working directly with them. And so that, you know, that to me also is really important because, again, it goes back to everything that's involved, you know.
Start to finish then, because not only so you're getting the silk produced by the producer and then you're, you know, doing the screens and hand printing and then you're hand sewing and hand cutting and
everything. Yeah. All made from scratch.
Wow.
So tell us a little bit about the difference between silk and cotton. I was looking at your website and I saw both items, but tell us about the differences in the process for you and what you have to work with.
So, you know, cotton costs like 10 times less than silk. And I always find it really ironic because I feel like the silk is so expensive, but when I'm printing on silk, I don't know if it's the dyes because they are different dyes, and I'll get into that. But it's you don't see mistakes, you know. I mean, I make mistakes, especially with screen printing. You're going to have joint issues, you know, or if the there is a little schlub, then that schlub will be a little, you know, white spot. But for some reason on silk, it's just, it's more expensive, but I find that the end product is also better. So it's, I guess, you know, the saying, you get what you pay for.
I don't know. It's maybe the luster because, you know, unless it's a cotton sateen, there's not going to be right. that luster that hides a lot.
Right. No, you're right. I mean, I think there's a lot of different elements. I think, and you know, the silk I'm working with mainly is, you know, the raw silk that I'm, the handcrafted silk that I am getting from India. And yeah, you just don't see like it's, even if there's like a joint problem, you know, because it's a repeat. So I'm printing, you know, moving the screen over. And sometimes you have like, you know, a joint mark and you don't see that on the silk. It's just more obvious on the cotton. It could be the dye. So with cotton, it's a much faster process because the dyes are pretty much ready-made. With the silk dyes, it's a powder base that I have to, you know, weigh. So I'm putting in, I have all the colors, and then it tells me how many grams I need to put of what, you know, and you're mixing colors, which is so fun. And that's a whole nother element that is so satisfying. And so I'm using pigment dyes with the cotton, and after everything's printed, I just have to iron the cotton. That sets the color. With silk, after everything's printed, all the material, the silk material has to be steamed for about 3 hours. And so that's a process that takes a long time that people also don't factor. And so silk is, you know, the final product is just so amazing. And when I'm printing, everything beforehand is written down. So it has to be methodical. I can't just start, you know, printing a design and say, okay, well, you know, the second screen, I'm going to do yellow and just kind of make it up as I go along. I mean, I used to do that. But I've learned that I have to have everything written down because otherwise, you know, I mean, it's just more time consuming. And I feel like it's, yeah, maybe it's more artsy, you know, and like, oh, I'm going to just do this. But sometimes the colors don't go as well together as if it's just methodical and I'm writing everything down per screen. So, for instance, You know, I'll have a design that has 7 screens. And so I'll, you know, all my screens are numbered. So 1 through 7, and then I'll write down, you know, like for instance, the one on the, in the video is the cherry blossom and sea print. And so I'll put, you know, first screen, I'm going to use red, second screen, I'm going to use orange, you know, and so that's just, it makes it faster. And there are 2 of us, my husband is on the other side of the table. So there are 2 of us because, you know, I'm working with 44 inch width fabric. So there, it's not like a t-shirt, you know, it's a whole nother process. And some of my screens are massive. So there has to be 2 of us.
I thought that video was brilliant, especially like you do that first color. I think it was like a blue, and then you can see where the screens didn't quite meet and there is the gap, but then the next screen comes in and it fills it in just so beautifully. It was like such a nice process to watch.
Thank you.
Very exciting.
With some of the images you create though, outside of fabric, have you created things that you could like exhibit in like in a gallery, like printed like prints, like 2-dimensional prints, as opposed to actually creating things to wear?
Actually, this year, last year, I, you know, have started to work on that. I feel like this is something that I really want to do, but it's really interesting because I feel, you know, prints on clothing is so different than like a wall art piece. I have to really change my, you know, way of thinking because it really is different. But last year I worked on a wall art piece and it's an 18 screen print. So that's the most I've, you know, ever made as far as screens. And, but that's an avenue I want to go. I feel like, you know, I'll always make clothes. I love printing and meeting women that are going to wear my item. I just feel it's so satisfying. And I remember women come back sometimes a few years later and they tell me, you know, and I say, oh yeah, you bought that one print. And they're like, how do you know? You know, I can put a face to it, which is really, really exciting and fulfilling as an artist. And I really would love to do that with the prints, the wall art pieces that I'm working on, which this year I'm going to, you know, work on. I have to build a body of work too. You can't just have one print. You know, I need to have, but I feel like now after so many years, you know, I've been working with textiles for over 20 years. I've learned that it all just takes time. I need to be patient, not to be in a hurry. And so that's the experience that comes with doing something for so long.
The reason I brought that up is I look at your work here. I have it on my screen here, and I thought, oh, some of these are just wonderful. It'd be great to also have them as wall art. And tell me one thing about and this is because I don't know the thing about fabrics, is the difference between the reversible ones. How do you go through that process? Is that printing on both sides of those things, and how complicated is that?
That's another really fun layer of, you know, the process is after everything's printed and steamed, I cut the fabric in half. So I get the fabric, that's hand woven. It comes in 11 meters. And so I cut the fabric. So 5.5 meter. And then I sit in my living room and I put just everything that was printed. And this year, the plan this year is to print about 400. So that's last year I did about 300. So I put 300 pieces down and then I just put, you know, 2 that go well together. I put on some music. And then see, you know, and I have a picture of just like this half circle or even a full circle around me. And I'm just getting pieces and putting what I think looks together. And that was practice because the first few years of me doing the reversible skirts, it was tough. And I was like intimidated and I was scared, like no one's going to like what I put together. And, you know, and it goes back to confidence, you know, back to how the Italians wear clothes, you know.
Yes, so easy.
You have a website, and you know, we had about 2 minutes here left, but that's how people can find you. But let's talk a little bit about that and also about doing commissions, how that process works.
So, yeah, my website is Scarlet with 2 T's, silkskirts.com. That's where people can find me. I do commissions, and, you know, that's a process. People tell me, like, well, I want this. How long is it going to take you? And I think, well, it's going to take probably like 8 to 10 months. But it totally can happen. It's just patience. You know, I can make a print for anyone. We can make an art piece together, and then I would, you know, deconstruct that image onto screens. But I have a lot of my commission pieces, you know, women tell me like, I like this print, but I want it in a, you know, kimono. And so, you know, I'll make it into a kimono. But yeah, that's fun. And, you know, you get to work with the clients directly, but, you need like to be patient with me, 'cause I just wish I had 24 more hours in a day.
Got to maintain your show schedule. I mean,
right. Oh, and speaking of my shows, yeah, I'm going to be in that part of the woods end of July at the Ann Arbor Art Festival.
Ah.
So, yeah, that's a good show. And I'm doing St. Louis in September. And all of my show schedule is on my website if people want to find me in their city. Or
tell us that website one more time before we wrap up.
So it's Scarlet Silk Skirts, Scarlet with two T's.
Okay, very good. Well, that's Shawnee Solomon, and you've heard her story about her creations. You can find her on the web and see her beautiful work, and also if you're interested, maybe get a commission there. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your art journey on Art of the Air.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you. It was such a joy.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Esther.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.